share with you my story? Would you share your dollar?
It's 12:09 on WGN. This is John Williams. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. Another busy hour for you today. And tomorrow, I think, will be exceptionally busy and interesting and helpful. Because tomorrow, Terry Savage is sitting in this seat. TerrySavage.com is the way to reach the website of the Chicago Tribune Monday business columnist. She's also a regular here at WGN Radio. And she's bringing with her somebody from the Illinois Department of Employment Security. So many of you have had frustrations and problems getting through or figuring out how to navigate unemployment benefits. And it's not been easy to get a hold of the people there. And that includes radio stations and newspapers. Terry has wrangled one of them to join her for at least 15 minutes of the show tomorrow. I'm not sure if it's the beginning or the end of the show, but I would be listening tomorrow. Tell your friends to listen tomorrow. I appreciate them listening now. But tomorrow, dial in this show if you've got questions about unemployment security benefits. Specifically, just as an example, a woman called into our show yesterday. We shared this with Terry when she visited with us on Wednesday. And that was, she got the benefits card in the mail from Key Bank. There's no value on it. That's not unusual. Eventually, the money gets put on there. It's been a month. And she's not a gig worker. She's a W-2 employee. So why isn't the money there? And Terry knew about that, but didn't have the solution to it. And she said, let's ask them more specifically, what's the holdup here? Now, some of you called in and said, well, your employer needs to do something and there's certain hoops you've got to jump through. Dial 3 when you call in on a phone line, which is sometimes difficult to get through to, but it shouldn't be that complicated. And we were told, at least anecdotally from some of you, that some fixes are in place. That's all tomorrow with Terry Savage. And one last note about that. At TerrySavage.com, there's an Ask Terry tab or link, and you can post questions there. She's making a list and checking it twice. She will talk with you and them about that tomorrow here on WGN Radio. By the way, speaking of businesses that don't want to close, we had an interesting conversation earlier today with that barber in Owosso, Michigan. He's a 77-year-old who himself is vulnerable to the coronavirus, but because of the principle of the thing and because of the cash of the thing, he said, I don't care, I'm going to open up. The cops served him a citation that, according to the Washington Times, is $1,000, maybe a day. He wasn't sure. He said, I don't care. $15 a haircut. He's working 15 hours a day, 7 days a week. The line is endless for people who want their hair cut, and he's going to go ahead and do it. I said, you've got benefits coming, that is unemployment compensation. Yeah, he said it was $137 or something like that. It was not $200. He said that's not going to do. The money the government is sending him isn't enough. He said he was denied a couple times for whatever reason. So he said, I'm just going to go ahead and work and you can arrest me if you want. And he's up there in Michigan cutting hair even today. It's 12:13 on WGN. Ian Schur joins us. And I'll start with you here, Ian. We'll take a break and then kind of drill into some of the stories you have. But I wanted to just throw you on because one of the things that you guys are writing about, Ian Schur is on a phone line, and you know him as the editor-at-large at CNET News. I have long said that before you hit send on any social media platform, there ought to be an app where it will send your tweet or your text, your post to an intermediary, a secretary, a friend, a colleague. And then before it goes out, they might talk you off something that would be unfortunate that you send out in the heat of the moment. You have a story that says Twitter is doing a test on a device that will make sure you want to send something before you send it out, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. They basically are going to read the tweet that you press send on, and they don't have a human being read it. They have a computer read it, and based on what the computer sees, it might go back to you and say, "Hey, this is kind of mean. Do you really want to send it out?" And the reason behind this is that I've talked to a lot of social media companies over the years, and one of the things that they've told me is that when they kind of ask people to think about the human being on the other end of their mean tweet or nasty comment, they tend to change their mind and realize, oh, maybe I shouldn't be so mean. Maybe I've been overly judgy, or, you know, that epithet will really hurt that person. And they change what they wrote. And so this is an interesting attempt by Twitter to kind of bring that idea into the mainstream. We'll see whether it actually does anything. But it's a sign that Twitter is really trying to make the conversation on its platform better.
This is a pet conversation Steve Bertrand and I have been having for the longest time. That is, people will reach out with really angry email or text to us, and if we follow up and communicate back to them, they're almost always apologetic or a little, you know, feel a little bashful about what they did. Right, Steve?
Listen. Yeah, I would just call him. In fact, sometimes when Ian was rude with me, I would just call him. And he always backed away.
That's true, though. But they go, oh, yeah, I like your show, or I like WGN, but I just, boy, I was angry about that thing, and I lashed out. And I think that's a message for both the receiver, don't take it too personally, but also the sender. We're visiting with Ian Schur, editor-at-large at CNET News. We frequently visit with him. And just one last note, Ian, about that story we just talked about a moment ago. Twitter having a little IA built into their app now that will, if they see a litany of bad words, they'll shoot you back a tweet saying, hey, are you sure you want to send this? A perfect business application, right? I could see how that would be helpful in a personal life, but wow, that would be smart maybe for all of your frontline business workers. Does that mean that the original tweet doesn't go out, that you have to then sort of hit it again in order to send it?
I mean, so far as I understand it, yes. They've only been testing this in limited groups, and I haven't had that experience, but what it's been on other platforms, like commenting systems on websites, that's exactly how it works. They kind of shoot back a little message saying, hey, are you sure you want to post this? And you can say yes or no, and then it goes out. So they're not keeping you from posting. They're just asking you to think twice.
Is big tech doing a lot of hiring these days, or are they caught up like everybody else in the crunch?
You know, they are hiring a bunch. So I have a story on CNET about how Apple and Amazon and Google and a bunch of others, we're talking about thousands of jobs that are open right now. And in fact, I spoke to a bunch of the data people out there, including Monster and Indeed and LinkedIn. They all said that hiring in the tech industry is actually either going up in some cases or falling less than most other industries. And by the way, California had some of the steepest declines in new initial unemployment claims this week that just came out today. So it's not just the tech industry. It's actually having a follow-on effect and helping the entire California economy. But it's a really interesting kind of indication that the tech industry is likely to get through this in a pretty okay way. And, I mean, it helps that they have more cash than most countries have GDP. But it's a good sign that, you know, companies like Apple and Google and Facebook seem to be at least trying to make sure that they're okay for this. And, by the way, that doesn't mean Uber, Lyft, and Airbnb are not getting hammered. They absolutely are. And that's the other thing, is that this is kind of hitting companies in different ways.
Right. Well, I guess it's not enough to be in the IT area. Maybe it depends specifically. There's plenty of coders working for Uber, but Uber is suffering. Are there some companies specific that are weathering this storm especially well, other than Amazon?
Like I said, Apple, Google, and Facebook, they've all are doing pretty okay. They all reported profits and revenue that were below what they could have been if we hadn't had this crisis. But certainly, they're still adding to their cash piles. You know, there are other companies out there like Robinhood, which is one of the, it's often called the stock trading app for millennials. That app, I spoke with them. They're actually planning to hire hundreds of people by the end of this year. And even Dell says that they are keeping up hiring. Microsoft is keeping up hiring. The companies that you know. The startup world, if you're in artificial intelligence and stuff like that, you are hiring like crazy during this time.
Facebook delivers eyeballs to sponsors, though. That's how they make their money. But since so many businesses have cut their advertising budgets, I'm pleased, I guess, to hear you say that Facebook is still adding to its cash pile. Even if they were breaking even, I think for any company right now, that would be really positive.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the funny thing about Silicon Valley is that, you know, we're all talking about obscene profits. And Facebook in general, their profit margin is somewhere around half, 50% or so. So they've always been able to, once they figured out advertising, they've always been able to generate money and profits. The question is how much, right? And also, how much are they going to spend to try and do things like market themselves to people in other countries so that they all start using this? Or how much are they spending on people who are going through and making sure that there isn't bad stuff on the platform? You know, everyone's raising armies of people who do that now, content moderators. So that all kind of plays into how that impacts the business. But you're right, advertisers are slowing down. Coca-Cola very famously said that they are not going to do very much advertising because they don't see the ROI, to which many of us said, ha, of course, we knew that for 20 years, but okay. I mean, I chose Coke already. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out.
Really? You think that Coca-Cola is so ingrained in our consciousness that they don't need to advertise anymore? I would beg to differ.
Debate this, but I've always kind of gone with the comedian Lewis Black on this, where I think that they should stop advertising and, you know, doing the Pepsi Super Bowl thing, and they should just send us $10 and say, here, try our soda. You probably don't like it, but I'll give it a shot.
Okay, that I'll take that. But it just seems to me like if Coca-Cola said, you know what, we're Coke, we are indomitable, Pepsi will never catch us, Pepsi would catch them if a new generation wasn't being inundated with Coke branding everywhere, even if the product...
Right, a new Pepsi generation. No, I hear you totally.
Well, I don't know that a superior product is always the passport for profits. Uber will require drivers and riders to wear face masks. Is this brand news?
You know, it's interesting news. I think part of what's going on is that Uber has this huge problem, right? You've heard about the layoffs at Uber and Airbnb and at Lyft. All of them are hit hard by this crisis. And Uber realizes that if we're going to get back into an Uber anytime soon, I have to know that I'm safe, right? And right now, if you get in an Uber, which most of us should not be because we're under stay-at-home orders, but if you do, a lot of Uber drivers, and we have photos of this on CNET, they're covering their cars in plastic. They're trying to set up kind of dividers between the driver's seat and the back seats. And many times they're wearing gloves and masks. And what Uber is saying is they kind of want to make this a standard that everyone's wearing masks, and that includes the riders. So they said they're going to come up with technology that makes sure that the drivers are wearing masks. I imagine that it might involve something to do with the camera in the phone. And then I don't know how they're going to handle customers, but Uber said that they're going to hold us accountable as well, which is not a bad thing when you consider everything.
I wonder if Uber or businesses, grocery stores, should have a supply of masks for people who don't have them. If you walk up to a Juul grocery store in Chicago and you don't have a mask, you can't go in and give Juul money. I know that masks are in short supply and are relatively expensive right now, but I'll bet they'd get their money back if they handed me one of those masks at the door if I don't have one.
I don't disagree with you. I think it's a smart idea to kind of come up with a system. And, you know, it's not the same, but, for example, when I've gone to Costco, they actually have me wipe down the cart before I walk in. They don't do it. They just hand me a soaking wet paper towel with disinfectant and tell me, go to town. And I think that that's the right answer, right, is that I trust that thing more than I would trust an overworked, exhausted employee employee at Costco to do it. So I think that these companies need to realize if they put the onus on us, we will respect that, but they need to give us the tools to be able to do that.
Apple and Google, here's a headline from CNET, give a look at coronavirus tracking technology and promise more privacy protections. Well, that almost seems like a contradiction of terms. How do you do that?
You're not entirely wrong. So you may have heard about this Apple and Google contact tracing app that they've built.
Yeah.
What they're doing is that by the end of the year, there's going to be an app in all of our phones, that pretty much 2 billion phones across the world. And what you'll be able to do is you opt in. It's not by default turned on. And what will happen is it'll actually, all of our phones will start communicating. And they'll do this in the background whenever we're walking around. And let's say that you and I end up on a street corner. We talk for 5 minutes, catch up, see how we're doing. Our phones will remember that we were near each other. Now, they won't store my name or your name or any identifying information. But if I go home and a couple of days later I have coronavirus, I get tested, doctor says I have it, they can enter in a code into my phone, and it'll broadcast an alert to everyone I was nearby in the last 14 days and say, hey, you may have been exposed. You should either isolate or go get tested. And I think this is a really smart idea. You know, the companies have been one of the things that's really made our fight against coronavirus here in the United States really tough is that we don't have a lot of contact tracers, which typically are health department employees who run up to someone in the hospital and say, okay, do you remember where you've been in the last 14 days? Who have you talked to? Who have you been near? What have you been eating? Most people don't remember. This would automate a lot of that. But the Apple and Google need to do it in a way that promises protections and that government isn't going to use this for surveillance. And we have explanation on CNET for how they promised that will happen. One of the key things also is that Apple and Google promised they'll shut it down when the crisis is gone, which I think is really good.
We'll have to hold them to that. Illinois is in phase 2 of a 5-phase plan to get back to normal. And phase 4, where it would really start to feel like normal, has a carve-out that we need to have more comprehensive contact tracing, which we virtually don't have right now. Less than 60 seconds left. YouTube's virtual graduation. Barack and Michelle Obama, Lady Gaga, celebrities. Can you just give me the headline on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a smart decision by Google to use all of that cash that they got to get a bunch of people to kind of have a graduation, right? I mean, the school year's over and not too long from now, and a lot of students feel that they've missed out. One of the key things on social media, you see people are kind of having fake graduations in their homes, and I think it's kind of nice that Google and YouTube are trying to do something to acknowledge all of the people who don't get to have a standard graduation this year.
It's nice to talk to you. You have I was about to say a good weekend. I'm not doing the show tomorrow. I'll be back next week. But have a good weekend. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Take care.
Ian Schur is the editor-at-large, CNET News. 1233 WGN, John Williams on the Wintrust Business Minute, on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the Business Minute right around the corner. Steve Bertrand will have that. On the phone line now, Jeff Kolko joins us. He's the chief economist at Indeed. It's the job site, the world's number one, they like to say. He's a PhD Harvard economist, and he's here to talk a little bit about where the jobs are and the jobs are not. Jed, welcome to WGN. How are you?
Thanks for having us here today. Doing as well as can be.
Yeah, that's the correct answer to that question. There's no easy answer to how are you doing. So we appreciate your time. I was just reading some of your reporting and writing. What is Indeed seeing about jobs? Where are they? Where are they not? What's going on out there?
This pandemic is causing one of the biggest economic crises that we've seen perhaps in decades. Right now, we see on our site job postings are down by about 40% compared to the trend last year. Tomorrow, in the monthly jobs report from the government, we are likely to see the highest unemployment rate that has been reported in decades and the biggest loss in jobs that's been reported in that time. Now, it's soon to tell how much of those job losses may be temporary. Some businesses have shut down but may reopen. Still lots and lots of uncertainty, but it's going to be a rough day for the numbers we'll get tomorrow.
What was the unemployment rate before this thing hit?
So the unemployment rate before was around the 3.5% range, and that was the lowest unemployment rate in about 50 years. And we'd spent several years with the labor market getting tighter and tighter. It was getting more difficult for employers to find people to hire because there were fewer unemployed workers for every open job. Now, of course, it's a whole new world. Even after this urgent crisis of the pandemic ends, we still it's still likely to take some time before we get back to anything like the tight labor market that we saw from the past couple of years.
What's the guess? What are the smart people saying the number's probably going to be?
Well, the smartest people aren't making any guesses about the future. There's still so much uncertainty about what happens with the virus and on the public health side that all has to get clear before we can make economic guesses. So people are expecting for the unemployment rate tomorrow could be anywhere in the high teens, perhaps even over 20%. Wide range of guesses. The thing is that the unemployment rate doesn't tell us the whole picture. Some people may have given up looking for work and won't be counted in the unemployment rate. So even a high number that we see tomorrow may not tell the whole story.
I wonder if the unemployment rate at 3.5% told the whole story anyway. That is, I know so many people who had more than one job. And while the unemployment number was low, the wealth of these people was not. Look at the sudden fix we find ourselves in because people didn't have savings. So as an arbiter of, say, the economic health of the country, I'm not real impressed necessarily with what the unemployment number is anyway.
There's no one number that can possibly tell the whole story of what's going on in the economy. On most measures, though, prior to a couple months ago, the data looked better on most fronts than 2 or 5 or 10 years ago. Unemployment was lower. Wages were rising faster, especially wages for lower income workers and lower wage jobs. The tight labor market really did start to narrow some of the big gaps that had opened up between those with really good secure jobs and everybody else. But now I think we're going to start to see some of those gaps widen at the same time as we feel the widespread effects of this crisis.
Jed Kolko's on a phone line, chief economist at Indeed. I was also looking at some of your charts and graphs, and you broke the unemployment numbers right now into various sectors. You, for instance, say that the sector of the economy hardest hit, arts and entertainment, obviously those are all shut down. Beauty and wellness, same story. Child care, hospitality and tourism, all 55 to almost 70% down. I was, though, surprised to see that pharmacies, nursing, loading and stocking, and software development are also off 25 to 33%. Even the pharmacies, even the nursing business is off significantly right now.
But thinking about the healthcare sector, even though this is a health crisis and there's incredibly strong demand for COVID-19-related healthcare, lots of people have had to put off or have chosen to put off other kinds of healthcare, non-urgent surgeries, other elective procedures, routine wellness checks. All of those things have slowed as the healthcare system is refocused on COVID-19. So we've seen a decline in job postings, even in some of the sectors that you think are even more essential today. Now, the decline in nursing and pharmacy jobs has been much milder than the decline in the hardest hit sectors, hospitality and travel, childcare, arts and entertainment. But it is still a widespread decline.
Do you think the recovery will be in that order, too? Will pharmacies and nursing come back first and foremost, or will the maybe arts and entertainment sector, with all the pent-up demand, come roaring back?
I think you could go either way. I think we could see bounce back, certainly not all the way back to where it was before this crisis started, but a partial bounce back as places reopen, restaurants and other other establishments come up with ways to serve their customers while still continuing to adhere to whatever sort of social distancing we need. And so we should see a partial rebound in some of the most shut down sectors. The big question is how long this acute phase of this crisis goes on. The longer it goes on, the more businesses might not be able to restart, the more people that become permanently unemployed, and the less business and consumer spending there is in the economy. And that'll determine whether we might then be in for a longer-term, more conventional-looking kind of recession.
You think that's why they're getting antsy right now, the president, the governors, I wonder, the employees themselves, the people?
At this point, I think we're all antsy, both on the healthcare side and on the economic side.
Yeah, right.
This is all something that none of us has ever experienced.
One last note, I'll just mention you guys posted the metros with the largest decline in job postings, fewest jobs available now, the largest decline, and maybe not surprisingly, Miami-Fort Lauderdale, a very popular but tourist spot, off 52%, and I've heard that it's just really bad in Honolulu, urban Honolulu, Hawaii, off 52%. Places like Kansas City, Missouri, off 46.5%, and you can find this and more at hiringlab.org. It's nice to visit with you today. Thanks for joining us, Jed.
Thanks for having us.
Jed Kolko is the chief economist at Indeed, the job site. Okay, Steve Bertrand's got the Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Grubhub is rebounding, which makes sense as we order more from shuttered restaurants. But Grubhub business actually dropped at the beginning of the pandemic. That's when we were rushing to stores to buy toilet paper and apparently food. Boeing is asking its largest 737 MAX supplier to resume work. That's a big step toward restarting production of the jet. The CEO of Spirit AeroSystems says they've been asked to start right away. And Chicago startup TimeDoc Health has raised $5.7 million in new funding. The healthcare startup creates virtual care management software for hospitals. Chicago Inno says that helps doctors remotely coordinate care for chronically ill patients. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's an agribusiness report from Orion Samuelson.
Tyson Foods plans to reopen its Dakota City, Nebraska beef plant today. I have not received word that they have done that as of yet, but that would come nearly a week after closing the facility following a surge of coronavirus cases among workers. Tyson closed the plant on Friday, initially planned to reopen in 4 days, but pushed that back to await test results. The plant employs 4,300 people and is among the largest employers for neighboring Sioux City, Iowa. But while the plant was closed, workers completed a deep cleaning of the operation. A Tyson spokeswoman said in a statement that the company also has adopted new measures for workers, including installing more than 150 infrared walk-through temperature scanners, mandatory face coverings, workstation dividers, and more space in break rooms. Meanwhile, just about every organization that's planning events for this summer are looking at plans to cancel or postpone. The 92nd annual Illinois FFA State Convention will not be held, at least physically. It will virtually, so you'll have to stay in touch with your FFA chapters to see what the events are. But I think many of you 4-H and FFA members and fair exhibitors are going to have to become good photographers, because the reports I'm getting are that a lot of county fair judges competition will be conducted by TV videos that 4-H'ers and FFA'ers and other exhibitors have to shoot and send to the leaders of those organizations. And the Illinois 4-H people have been working on this as well. So today, events through July 5th have been canceled or transitioned to an online format. I guess the word is, because I don't have time to name all the postponements or the cancellations here on this program. Stay in touch with your FFA leaders, your 4-H leaders, and your county fair people who plan and put together those events, because it looks like many of them, you won't be looking at the judge face-to-face, and the judge won't be looking at your animals face-to-face either. That's Your Money on 720 WGN.
It's 1248 on WGN, the Business Lunch. The Wintrust Business Lunch continues now with Amy Guth. Hi, Amy. How are you?
Hey, John. How's it going today? Happy Thursday.
Yeah, likewise to you. Big day tomorrow, right? Everybody's looking at what the numbers are going to be.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Nonetheless, the Labor Department has put out some preliminary numbers, and it looks as if another 3.17 million jobless claims in the last week. So that brings that number up to 33.5 million. What's, you know, not much to say about it this week. I think week by week, we've said, okay, this is starting to reflect a lot more small business owners or a lot of self-employed people and gig workers. The only real thing of note this week to look at these, to look into for these preliminary numbers, are it's slightly lower than the 3.5 million expected by economists. That's according to a Dow Jones survey. And it's slightly below the previous week's 3.846 million. So, you know, we're looking at the potential. I think it's raised a little bit of hopes. Is, okay, has this already peaked and are we entering a plateau? Is there more to come? What does this look like? But I think there's a little bit of optimism perhaps being read into these numbers of like, hey, well, maybe the worst of it is already there. But then again, 33.5 million is just such a huge number of people that are out of work.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's a lot like the medical numbers. I mean, none of these numbers are good, but if we can at least start to flatten the curve, say with COVID cases or in this case with job losses, then we'll at least think we're going to get out of this eventually. It's not getting as bad every day as it's been.
Yeah. It's a matter of like, okay, progress doesn't happen overnight. So every little piece we're going to be able to maybe call progress. So I think people are watching this really closely. Since these numbers got moved to being released weekly, a lot of like, okay, well, what does this mean in context of last week? And what does this mean overall of the past 7 weeks? And so, you know, I think there's a little bit of optimism for the first time in the 7 weeks that, you know, that number maybe isn't going up. We'll still have to wait a few more weeks to see if that trend continues.
Jed Kolko was on with us just a little bit ago, and we were talking about the unemployment rate. And what will it be tomorrow with these kinds of losses you're talking about? Will we go from 3.5 to 17%, 19%? Will it be 20%+? We'll get those numbers tomorrow. Neiman Marcus becomes the second major retailer to seek Chapter 11. We've been following the retail sector with you a little bit. It was, what was the last one? Was it J. Crew we were talking about?
That's right. It was J. Crew on Monday that had filed bankruptcy. And so Neiman Marcus is a really interesting, I think, kind of a litmus test of the economy right now, because that's the first department store. So second major retailer, but first department store. Department stores have already been stressed for a while. They're a big deal to commercial landlords because they kind of anchor tenant spaces of malls and things like that. Neiman Marcus is a very high-end luxury store based in Dallas. So a lot of people are kind of trying to interpret that as, well, does that mean that appetite for luxury goods is just not there, even maybe among people that didn't see a major hit to their income or maybe are a little more flexible in economic downturns? I think there's a lot of economists today that seem to be trying to make sense of what that means, that, you know, something like a really high-end Neiman Marcus could shutter. That said, not many businesses could survive just flat out being closed for any period of time, even a luxury goods one. They, like many others, had shuttered and furloughed a lot of employees. They had moved then to a curbside pickup sort of situation, mm-hmm. depending on different states. But nonetheless, so we'll see what kind of the next steps are for them. There's still a lot of eyes on, you know, on other big retailers and things like that. And, you know, of course, Macy's here, where a lot of people are looking at that and what that means for them. But I'm sure it will not be the last, but here is the second one, the first major department store that we've seen impacted in such a significant way.
Airbnb is cutting 25% of its workforce as the virus continues to pummel the travel sector. I have to just say this. I know some people that have Airbnbs, And they're frustrated because their places are clean. And if people want to get out, but you can't go to movies, you can't go to stores, but you could go to another clean home. If you stayed within your family unit, why can't they open up their business in Michigan and you go walk the streets there? I'm sympathetic to that argument, Amy.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of really interesting conversation around Airbnb because it occupies such a unique space in the industrial sector. Now, what's really interesting about this story to me, and there's several points of it, but one of them is the CEO, Brian Chesky, wrote an email to the entire workforce of Airbnb on Tuesday that immediately this letter was shared widely. You can find it. It's on the Airbnb website and their press room. It's a very heartfelt note. It sounds very regretful, and it's very, very long. You know, we see these high-profile CEO notes go out. They get leaked. We see them a lot. They're just kind of, hey, we had to make some hard decisions. This one really, I mean, it really certainly seems like he is really tortured by this decision. And it's a very long letter. And he really talks about, here's how it's going to break down. Here's how it will be, how people will be provided for. Here's what we're giving you. And he's also dealing with employees in a lot of different countries. So he does say something very interesting towards the end of it, though. He talks about that after this is over, he, you know, no one really knows what the travel world will look like, but he has this hunch that people are going to want to stick a lot closer to home. And so this is an opportunity for Airbnb to get back to their roots. So a lot of people are trying to figure out what could that mean? What is the pivot ahead for Airbnb? He refers repeatedly in this note to, we had to look ahead and say what we think the business will be and shift our teams accordingly and cut people that will not support that goal. So what to me that says is that in the future, at some point that we don't yet know when that is, at some point we're going to see a major pivot from Airbnb, whether that's kind of doubling down on regional hubs or focusing more on short-term rentals in your immediate area that you could get to with maybe without air travel, something like that. It'll be really interesting to see what happens there. However, in the meantime, 25% of its workforce will be removed. And he, you know, according to this letter, has really taken a lot of steps to provide some career counseling. He's letting everyone keep their MacBook laptops. He's, you know, really trying to do a lot of stuff for his employees to try to help them land well. And he's opened a, you know, kind of created this outward-facing portal and even said he's directed a lot of people in the HR department and recruiting department to help his former, now former workers find new work.
Talk to me about the latest at Zoom, Amy.
Okay, so Zoom has been really interesting to me because, you know, that's how so many of us are communicating right now, even with our families and things like that, that maybe live in other states. But there's been a lot of security issues. We've heard about Zoom bombing where someone can just kind of storm your meeting and jump in and put in hateful or inappropriate content in there. And then we saw earlier in the week, Google Meet kind of said, well, we're going to go free for a lot more users. So take that, Zoom. And so, in Microsoft Offices and Teams, it seems like this little kind of video conferencing battle, one-upmanship is sort of emerging here. So Zoom played their hand. They announced this morning that it had acquired Keybase, which is a startup that is all about encryption. They are the experts in encryption. They do a lot of this work. So what this to me says, Zoom is trying to say, okay, fair enough. We definitely have a problem with security. The steps we've taken are not quite enough. We need to do more. So this is going to help prop them up as a more credible, more private, and more secure option for people to do their video conferencing, because a lot of people had said, you know, Google and a lot of tech workers have been banned from using Zoom at all, saying, do not use that. Go with, you know, Google Meet or use FaceTime, use something else because of these encryption issues. So their acquisition of Keybase, we're going to see a lot more security features rolled out for Zoom, I think, pretty quickly, because this is a pretty rapidly moving thing where they're competing for space, because this is how people, human beings, are connecting right now. So I think it's kind of urgent that people get that people behind these companies kind of get a hand on it. And so we'll see what happens in the next week ahead from Zoom with this acquisition.
I was listening yesterday to the Supreme Court, and I thought maybe they were getting Zoom bombed when in the middle of testimony. You heard a toilet flush.
Toilet flush.
And that's the real deal. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, these are interesting times, right? I think people know we're all kind of just doing our best, so it's a little forgiving. There's a video of a meteorologist with his golden retriever jumping on his lap. He's doing the report from home, you know, like things like that are happening. And you know, because we're relying on this technology to keep ourselves connecting with others right now.
Amy Gu, thanks for your time again, Amy.
Thanks, John.